So I know that most of you come to these talks to hear about
the CEU credits. So if you're looking for credits for this session, please come up and sign and put your number on the sheets.
Thanks, Kurt.
Yep.
And if you're presenting, I'll just give you a wave 5 minutes before your time's due, and then I'll stand up when you have 1 minute left. All right, so as I said, most folks come up here to show data. What I'm going to actually show you today is a website that we built that intends to help farmers make a decision about whether or not biochar is right for their farm. Before I start, I just want to acknowledge the folks who did the work. Claire Phillips and Adam Lindsley are both postdocs in Oregon, and they worked both on the front end and the back end to make this possible. Sarah Light worked on a lot of the case studies with us to compose those. This was really a stakeholder-driven process, and so we had quite a few of our farmers help us compose the case studies and contribute to them, but also tell us what they'd like to see in this sort of a decision support tool. Okay, so we all know that biochar is, you know, partially combusted carbon, and that depending on how you make it and what you make it from, you get really different properties. And so, you know, just on the macro level, you can see that this hazelnut biochar is really different from this poultry litter char. But the same is true on the molecular level. And so if we just compare those, you can see in approximate analysis, in the hazelnut char, there's a lot more stable carbon, and the poultry litter has a lot more ash. But it even gets more complex than that, because as you increase production, as you increase production temperature, in the poultry litter char, you end up getting more ash, and in the hazelnut, you end up getting more stable carbon. And this has serious impacts for growers who are trying to decide what sort of biochar to add. So if you compare these two in terms of fertilizer value, you can see that the poultry litter has quite a bit more phosphorus and potassium and has more of liming value than the hazelnut char. So growers are pretty confused because it's difficult to predict how the biochar is going to interact with soils and plants. Oh, this has been great for science, right? We've had a ton of publications on sort of these one biochar, one plant, one soil systems, but there's been no generalizations that have been passed down. This is a synthesis, a meta-analysis of how biochar interacts with soils, and even though there's this one plant, one biochar sort of paradigm, it still seems like biochar does significantly improve our soils. So these meta-analyses have shown that biochar builds healthy soils, sequesters carbon, increases water. So it's really has a lot of possibilities, but still farmers aren't implementing biochar-based practices. And this is generally because there's no recommendations from NRCS or ARS about how or when to apply it. These one plant, one biochar studies have limited impact, and there's no predictive tools. Also, strangely enough, farmers don't really listen to academics. They tend to listen to each other and to their crop specialists. So this lack of communication from early adopters, I think, has really straddled us. And so what we intended to do was put together this Pacific Northwest Biochar Atlas. This is available at pacificnorthwestbiochar.org. And what this intended to do is to synthesize studies to measure how water behaves in different soil types amended with different chars. Facilitate communication through case studies, and build, and this is really the key, is building these predictive and decision support tools so farmers can decide whether it makes sense economically and ecologically to add biochar to their soils for their specific cropping system. And then, of course, connecting biochar suppliers with growers who are interested in it. So I'm just going to walk you through, I'm just going to walk you through this website and show you some of the things that we've done. Now this is, I wouldn't say this is in beta testing, I'd say this is in alpha testing because we just kind of made it and threw it out on the web. So I'd love if you have time, if you and were interested, to go to our website and check it out and then email me and tell me how we can make it better. This is currently live. So here's our homepage, and from here you can go to five different places. You can check out what exactly is biochar, you can find out the benefits. You can learn about how people are making and using biochar both in useful situations and situations where it hasn't worked so well. And then you can, what I'm, again, these tools that we've made are the main crux of our website. So seeing what your problems are in your soil, identifying those problems, identifying which biochars could ameliorate those problems, and then selecting a char and doing a cost-benefit analysis. And then, of course, finding someone who can make that char for you. So just really quickly, we made this slider that's just very educational. What is biochar? How is it made? What are the feedstocks that it comes from? And how those feedstocks influence temperature? And, of course, we've got some history of char, too. And then some slider on the benefits, both the ecological and climate mitigation benefits, including adaptation to drought and using invasive species to restore ecosystems. Again, what I'm really interested in are these tools that can help folks decide whether or not biochar is useful from them, again, by identifying problems in their soils, seeing how biochar can help those problems, and then selecting a char that's right for that crop and that soil, and then doing a benefit analysis. So the first thing you need to do if you're going to learn about your soils is get some data about your soils. And so what we did was we married Google Maps to Sorgo data. And in the Pacific Northwest, you can type up any location and come up with an area here. We just picked the area around our specific location. And if you click on it, I was afraid that was going to happen. Let's go back. If you click on it, see if I can fast forward through this. There we go. Sorry about that. If you click on it, it'll pull up information both about the taxonomy, about physical properties of your soil, including textural analysis, organic matter, bulk density, and then the moisture properties. And while it's fun to click around on that and look at to see what your soils look like, what really becomes useful is using that data to then launch our selection tools. So we'll go ahead and launch our biochar selection tool. And what you can do is take the data you just grabbed from Sorgo and then use it to populate this, which is intended to show deficiencies in your soil. So here you can see you have very low organic matter, very low fertility, also you can pull up your textural analysis, which will give you some information about your moisture. So then it'll analyze those data. It'll tell you you have very low carbon for your system you're interested in. If you have low carbon. And it'll bring in fertility data as well. So here, in order to have fertility data, you really need to know the crop you're interested in. And so we gathered data from 32 extension publications on major crops within the Pacific Northwest. And I'll show you an example of how you could use that data to select a biochar. So we've got row crops, horticultural crops, and then really common crops like grass seed crops. So say that you're interested in growing tall fesco and you want to know if biochars be useful for you. Here are the extension requirements for fertility in a tall fescue system, say for phosphorus and potassium. You can see that we're not meeting the requirements in our soil to grow that crop. So we are meeting the acidity requirements for that crop. And we do have enough soil moisture based on our textural analysis to support growing tall fescue. So now what you can do is say, well, how can biochar help me with that? So choosing some of your goals for using biochar. And those goals could be, say, adding fertility in this case, so adding phosphorus, adding potassium to increase that fertility. And then a third goal, for us, since we're in a really low carbon system in this case, would be to add carbon to the system. I'll let the movie catch up to me. So then you can prioritize these goals, and then we'll hit recommendations, and it'll tell you which biochar within our library of 81 chars is the best for you. So here, for fertility purposes, poultry litter would be the best, and then for our third priority, adding carbon, it would be more hazelnut shells or wood-based chars. And then you can see a summary of those goals that are ranked. And here it'll tell us that poultry litter will meet most of our goals. And then you can ask what amendment rate is good for you. You can change the char. You can also change the units. In this case, we can see that 0.5 tons per acre of poultry litter will meet both our phosphorus and our potassium requirements. And so that's pretty good, and it'll also help condition our soils. But will it be cost effective is a whole another question. And so what we've done is we've made this cost benefit analysis tool where you can see if it's worth putting biochar in your soils. Okay, so just some instructions on how it works, and then you can vary the cost of biochar. We've taken the average according to IBI, what biochar costs in the US, and just use that as a default. I'm going to say 0.5 tons per acre because that's what's going to meet our fertility requirements in this case. And then you can see that biochar costs about $1,300 per ton according to IBI. And then you can put in some crop values. Now, if I'm a farmer using this, I probably know what my crop's worth, but if not, you can pull up values that we've taken from the National Ag Survey and stuck in this little information. So there's the major crops in the Pacific Northwest and what they're worth and what their typical yields are per acre to use this tool. Now I'm going to, again, use tall fescue as an example. I know that tall fescue is about $1,800 a ton at the market and that our average yield is about 0.75 tons per acre. I'm going to guess that biochar might increase my yields based like 15% just based on fertility. You can change that and play around with it in the crop cost-benefit analysis. You can also account for the change in input. So if I'm adding biochar, I'm probably not going to be adding phosphorus in this case, so I'll take that out of the equation. And then we can see how much that'll save from a perspective of a farmer. Here, of course, it doesn't save that much. It saves, you know, about $63 every year for 5 years. We decided to use 5-year increments just because we don't know what the benefits of char are and we didn't want to go out too far. So what's my results? Well, in this case, over 5 years, including costs and inputs and yield increases, I would make about $334 per acre more. And that seems like maybe, okay, maybe that's compelling as a farmer, but maybe not. So let's try a different crop. What would a different crop look like? So again, going in and playing with these crop values in blueberries, you have the same value, but you get a much bigger yield. Same crop inputs, but you can see here that biochar might make me $6,000 more an acre. So that would be much more compelling. And in that case, I might want to learn about how other blueberry growers are using biochar. So I could go to my case studies where we've populated with a number of studies that look at anything from pasture land to dry land wheat production within the Pacific Northwest, dry farming, and blueberries. These are meant to be sort of magazine-style articles that are palatable to the general public that talk about how growers and some researchers are using biochar. So I think this is a good method to communicate those results. And then if you're really interested, you can click on our Find Biochar Producers. These are biochar producers in the Pacific Northwest. You can click on these little pins, find them, and then click to their website. Now, there's a few more other tools on this website that I don't have the time to go over today because Kurt will take me down off this stage if I don't shut up. I encourage you to all go to this website and explore those tools. We've got tools where you can compare chars to chars and see how they differ in their water holding capacity and a lot of other fun and exciting things. We are currently conducting studies that look at how these biochars behave in soil, and so farmers can predict, and we'll put up a predictive tool about how water holding capacity will change depending on how you add the biochar to your soils. We have 7 sites out across the Pacific Northwest looking at different sites with various textural analysis or various textural differences. So we've got sandy soils, we've got clay soils. We hope to have that functional soon and we'll add it. We're conducting surveys that evaluate these online tools, both with growers and with the biochar communities. And we hope to build more case studies through talking with growers and at extension events. So this project was funded from the Northwest Climate Science Center and from the Northwest Climate Hub. It was the first time they had actually come together to pool funds to make a project, so we were pretty excited to have their support. And with that, I can take any questions. So what kind of applications of how biochar might apply to forest systems?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
Yeah. Well, you know, we specifically got this money for ag, but we're really interested in expanding the site. So right now, the Google map that connects to the Sergo data is limited to the Pacific Northwest. We'd like to import Sergo data from the country so that you can do this across a wider geographical area. But yeah, I think in other applications, forestry and mine sites, in other degraded lands, it would really add quite a bit of functionality and practicality to the website.